Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
SansPants Radio, Australia's most five-thumbed podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George DiMorales. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show, I have comedian slash lawyer, Andrew Portelli. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm good, George. How are you?
I'm good. Did you like I put comedian, was it appropriate comedian first, then lawyer slash?
Yeah, I think, I haven't worked as a lawyer in a couple years. So I think gradually that there will be more distance between those two things on either side of the slash, but yeah, I'm happy for people to know that while I am a comedian, I still have money.
Ladies,
I'm not broke, not yet.
Yeah,
soon though. pretty soon.
It's been a long pandemic.
I am bleeding. It's not going good. It's not going good at all. This has been a disaster. Yeah,
you're laughing as you're saying all this, but I'm starting to get a bit concerned.
Yeah, well, you got to laugh, don't you?
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
What's going on? How's it all gone?
Everything's good. I'm in the middle of moving house, so I don't know what you mean. Like, what do you want me to say?
To be honest, I just threw it out there, then okay. I realized the framing.
Yeah.
In what context?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Is everything okay?
This is like a book thing, right?
Yeah. No, I guess just to... Because on that, but I think just quickly, we'll jump to the book then.
Sure.
Go back. Just one quick thing is, so you are, like, at the moment, pure comedy is meant to be your...
Yes. I quit being a lawyer in October 2019, which was a really good timing.
You got like 3 months.
Yeah, I got three. It's like taking my shoes off and then stepping directly into dog shit.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah.
There's
except
no protection.
It's your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's okay. So that's been a long year and a half now, essentially. But we're out the other side, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's like positives.
Yeah, there's. Yeah, I'm sure that things will get better now. I mean, it's not like that could get worse.
I'm glad we've got that on record now, in case things get horrible. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, look, we will start with the book and then we'll jump around from there and get more about
you
as well. Because, rich history of law and then comedy and stuff we can go into it all. But let's start with the book. So your book of choice for today is?
A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Le Guin.
Mm-hmm. Classic of the fantasy genre in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so. She's obviously an amazing, like, sci-fi fantasy author. This is probably, I've read a fair amount of fantasy, more than I would ever admit in a social situation.
You're on the right podcast.
I would never talk about this in a bar.
Yeah, were you a huge fantasy geek growing up, or just as one of many books you kind of
read? I read everything, but I did like fantasy and sci-fi. I only came to this later, but in high school I read like all the Lord of the Rings and also I was into Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
And Dune, which is sci-fi, obviously. And also, like, Raymond D. Feist, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just all the all kind the of classic.
Yeah. Did you? Did you
classic, I'm relying on a girl to ask me to the year 12 ball kind of books. Because I'm not going to ask.
I've never heard that criteria.
That's what I think of. I'm like, if you're reading these books and you're not going to ask, like, someone better ask you because you don't have the confidence.
I read all those books. Oh, yeah, actually, that does make sense.
Yeah, well, someone did ask me, I should say.
Oh, really? Someone actually asked you?
Yeah, yeah, well, don't sound so surprised, but yeah.
I just can't believe, like, I went to an all-boys school, so I didn't get to experience any of that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The very idea of someone. Like,
yeah, it's great.
I feel so special.
And ever since then, I've been a feminist.
It's actually, John, that's sudden, just because I haven't discussed it with someone before. So with Raymond E. Feist, for anyone listening, that's another one of the, I always say Lord of the Rings is the catch-all for all these ones, fantasy worlds with characters in it. That one was unique in terms of just like how intergenerational the series were. Did you have, like, he wrote like 20 or 30 books or probably more in that universe.
Yeah.
How many of them did you read?
I honestly don't even know. Like, out of all of them, those were the ones that were kind of like enjoyable escapism that then just left my mind immediately. So I remember the name was like Krondor, like Return to Krondor. But I honestly don't remember anything about the books apart from the name Krondor, which does say a lot, I think, about what kind of books they are. Because,
yeah,
there's no literature where there's a place called Krondor.
Yeah.
It's very much like, oh, you nerds are going to love this shit.
I was just thinking of that actually recently because I just finished Brandon Sanderson's second book, The Mistborn Trilogy, and it's called The Well of Ascension.
Right. Yeah.
That's you're marking to a certain group with that. Well of Ascension.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about Ursula Le Guin is I think she's one of the few authors, like fantasy authors, where you can read her and it's not seen as embarrassing these days because she was kind of, I guess, like feminist and like she, there were just all these, like there's all this other credibility that she has. And because she's read, because she's written stuff that I guess would be considered literature as well. Sort of like Margaret Atwood, I put her in the same category.
Yeah, actually, I totally do. Yeah. Like, to the point of almost, like, I get confused sometimes about who's written what.
Yeah.
I casually think about it.
Yeah.
Margaret Atwood, The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because that's the left hand of dark. Yeah, because I think of Ursula K. Le Guin, and I don't even know if it's true because I haven't read her in a while, but I feel like even literary-wise, she was, like, her writing is probably more literature vibe, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, she's definitely a better writer. Like just in terms of writing like even a sentence than someone like Raymond E. Feist, who was just bashing them out.
That's what I mean. So yeah, it's weird the ones that do that kind of crossover, I think, for the that crossover from literature to like that, it's elevated to this level.
It's not pure escapism, like there's some sort of message snuck in.
That's what I was thinking, because that makes you think of His Dark Materials. Have you read that?
Yeah.
I always think of that. I kind of put that.
Yeah.
Where I just feel like it's actually written.
Yeah.
Well, and like the it's a very mythic, like it just feels deeper than just the book itself.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true of all genre fiction. There's always, you know, there's always like really pulpy stuff, and then there's stuff that has more literary pretensions, or is maybe, like revisionist or whatever.
He's doing more than just like
hitting the marks.
Exactly. That's what I think Raymond E. Feist especially, because like if he just kind of did that cycle of things like 12 times. By the end, it was like it's an even bigger dark one.
Yeah,
we have to get even more powerful.
It's crazy how big this dark one is. That's right. He had the one. Yeah, that's right. Magician. That was his. Yeah.
That was the first
Now I remember. I mean, I think Robert Jordan is kind of similar. like maybe a bit better than Raymond E. Feist, but definitely, oh, there's no deeper meaning here. This is just like, let's just do a, like a, build a big world with many characters and then suck the nerds in for for 12 books.
Yeah. Well, they do say that he was doing a sort of a, he was doing his own take on gender in society and stuff because obviously the women in that
are
all the powerful ones.
Yes.
So there was this view that it was actually quite a feminist.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but it was also like all the, he wrote the women characters so in such an irritating way that it was really hard to be on their side. Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. His heart was in the right place, but
yeah.
The sentences themselves were not helpful. I know what you mean. So what made this your like fave, I guess?
Well, I only reread it recently, which I, and I thought that would make it easier to talk about.
Okay, well, that's losing a lot of credibility.
but so that was my second or third time through, and it's, I think it's the first time that I really appreciated just how good it is and how much there is there, because yeah, I think the like the philosophy behind the books, I've found really resonated after like this whole pandemic, and I guess you know, like doing comedy intensely for years and then having everything shut down and then like actually thinking about it quite a lot and reading this book, and somehow it all came together in this weird way. So I, yeah, that was my motivation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what, like, cause I've read it, but like I told you before, sure, like years ago,
yeah.
What is the philosophy kind of behind it again?
Okay. So the book, at least the first book, is about, Ged, and it's a story about this young kid who has talent as a wizard, and he lives in like the stick somewhere, and he discovers his talent and then pursues his talent, and then it's his like journey from boyhood into manhood, his training and dealing with this like this evil that he's loosed upon the world when he used his power in an unwise, indiscriminate way, right? So the there are all these like Taoist kind of themes about like how the world is in balance and you shouldn't act until you know the consequences of your action. And the best thing to do is to listen and to sit in silence, and only do what is necessary. So, I mean, the reason that I liked that was, after we went into lockdown, I just got off social media completely, like this year. And
like for how long?
I mean, how long was that big lockdown that we just got out of? 3-4 months?
Oh, the recent one?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 months?
Yeah, yeah. And before that, like we'd been going through the comedy festival, and, you know, a big part of being a comedian these days is posting on social media and just reminding people that you exist.
Yeah.
And it's not just for people who might be interested in your work, like, you know, comedy fans, but also just people like other comedians and bookers and all that sort of stuff. You just always have to be in their faces. And I think that has a distorting effect on how you are as a person. So
how so?
Well, just because, you know, like, I don't know about you, I don't like self-promotion. I like to just like get up and perform and then go home. I hate like having to post all this shit about, you know, like this big gig that I did, and then feel weird and like have to keep checking the likes and all of that nonsense. And you know, just that feeling of like lack,
yeah,
that it generates.
No, 100%. Like, yeah. I mean, some people do it naturally. They're just constantly doing stories. And yeah. I think that's just who they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm very much in the same.
It's the equivalent of like going up to someone like that you know and going, hey, I just did this big thing. And it's like you would never do that if it was one-on-one. But for some reason, because it's all mediated through this like Instagram or whatever, it's seen as normal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just got off all that stuff and started hanging out like around the creek near my house, and then thinking about why people do comedy and all that sort of stuff, and I was reading this book at the time, and it occurred to me that in the same way that a wizard casts a spell, a comedian tells a joke.
Love it already. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. There is like a degree of discrimination that you need to, or discernment that you need to exercise when you think about what kinds of jokes you tell or what kind of things you put out there, because it does affect things. It does affect like how people see you, but also maybe how people think or what people think is okay. Like there are effects.
So you mean like in terms of just the content of what you're saying,
the content,
the ideas that you're putting forward, you want to be a bit, you want to be slightly socially responsible without, obviously that can sound like a stiff, boring thing, but like it means something what you're saying. Is that what you kind of mean?
It means something. But also just like, oh, it's okay to actually think about it rather than going, it's a joke, so who cares?
Did you feel like you weren't doing that before?
I definitely, my view has always been like the important thing is to get laughs, and it still is. It did make me think more about what I was doing.
So do you mean in terms of, I guess, because there's a few different ways I could do that, and I have probably opinions on all of them, but like I guess in terms of like how you're going about it, the respect you're treating it, or is it more just like literally just, oh, the message you're trying to get across? Like how, I guess that's how I mean.
I think it's probably more a thing of approach, like just trying to have more. I think when you start, you just write jokes and you keep whatever works, and there's no more choice exercised than that, because you're so desperate for laughs because you don't know how to get laughs. And then I think you keep going and it's like, oh, I know how to write a joke, but how do I choose like which jokes to tell, you know, like actually you like have some kind of decision making process about, oh, I'm not, my criterion isn't just whether this gets a laugh, but it's also, am I being a prick or whatever?
Yeah.
You know? In the past it was just, does it get a laugh? And I've said some pretty I've got some pretty full on jokes.
You do sometimes have people might be surprised by the dark places you can go sometimes with your stuff.
That's what I'm talking about is just being a little bit more thoughtful.
So you're saying that the Taoist, which is the, like, I don't know much about Taoism, I suppose.
Yeah.
So was that something you knew about before the book and then you were kind of drawing it threads into it and that kind of coalesced into something? Or?
No. So I think we're all kind of familiar with the ideas of like the world is in balance and things that you do can put it out of balance and all of that sort of stuff. That's a pretty common idea. That's the basic philosophy that's presented in the book by all the more knowledgeable wizards. And it's interesting because then through the rest of the series that then is complicated by different things, and there are kind of like feminist overlays and blah, blah, blah. But
and all that shit, you know.
Well, no. I just mean like, that's the good thing about her is that she keeps, you know, like she presents like all the wizards as these are the wisest dudes, And then by book four, she's basically saying, yeah, these guys are wise in their way, but they're also like morons. And there are other forms of knowledge. So there's a kind of broadening out in the series that I like. But yeah, so those themes are quite overt in the book. But I actually didn't connect it to like Taoism until you asked me to do this podcast. And I looked up the book on Wikipedia. And I was like, yeah, it's Taoist. So yeah, that's good.
You won't ask me more on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's not going to be a second question. Once I say that word, he's going to be like, wow, damn, dude, that's really
good. I better not ask any more questions about that. This guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. And I understand that Taoism is Eastern. So it's East. You know,
it's East.
You know, you got the East, you got the West.
That's it.
North, South.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, because I guess, does that reflect in like, yeah, the idea of the balance stuff? And without spoiling it, I used to spoil all the books in this all the time, happily. Yeah. But I do, and maybe it was because I was younger when I read it, but the ending of that first book, because the whole journey that he goes on to figure out this shadow and what he has to do.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a satisfying resolution. It was like, and so obvious. I love when it's so obvious, but you don't realize, and then you're like, oh, of course. And then it just adds.
It's brilliant. I mean, that's the other thing that I like about her is she doesn't have like these huge climactic battles. Really, the conflicts that the characters have are usually resolved by learning, like knowledge and guile. It's like they're just trying to kind of make the right decision. So all the conflict, a lot of it is more internal than it is external, which is something I think that separates her from a lot of other fantasy where it's like, who has the biggest army? And, oh, like, you know, even Lord of the Rings. Our allies showed up late. And so there's this now, the tide of battle has turned. Mm. Whereas with her, it's more the character is just trying to work out what is the right thing to do. And, yeah, I think that end sequence is a really good... It's resolved in such a clever way that doesn't feel cheap, but it's also true to the kind of elevated spirit of the book.
Yeah, and I think like it's a good point. Like she doesn't just make it like the biggest armies battling each other.
Yeah,
who's the most powerful?
Who's got the biggest energy beam? Yeah, which exactly. Is like all the Wheel of Time shit. It's like, whoa, and this beam was even bigger somehow.
And then he did. Oh, it looks like no wait, he's got an even bigger beam.
Yeah, like a Dragon Ball Z
Dragon Ball Z. Yeah. And I think the good stuff. Although I got to say, I think Brandon Sanderson, who I mentioned once, I think he can sometimes do well with that in terms of having some of the, even though he actually tries to have his cake and eat it too, because he has like quite these epic big battles, but at the same time, he grounds it within characters making certain decisions at certain points. I think.
Yeah. I think that's always there's always that balance in, especially in fantasy. Like, I mean, Game of Thrones was tried to really push the character development and stuff, but it did have those big scenes as well. But I think that, maybe that's one reason that I think Ursula Le Guin bears rereading is because it's more adult, you know, even though I think A Wizard of Earthsea is seen as children's literature. In a lot of ways, it's like, oh no, this is written by an adult for adults. Like,
It's like
this is an adult way of being in the world, like a much more considered, quiet way.
Yeah, and I think like it's for kids, is in terms of yes, like kids enjoy, but it's actually for all ages. Is really what it is. Like, it's the philosophy, which I think that's why I do think of his Dark Materials trilogy kind of the same way. Just because it's like, it's kind of for everyone in a way.
Yeah.
So talking of the way she does and how you approach it, and that's what you liked when you read that. How to connect that to the comedy? That's what I'm trying to think of. Like, in terms of your writing yourself, because I guess how you look at it and how you look at the world, and you like that.
Yeah.
Is there any connections you could draw there? Like, as in when you... Okay, let's take a step even further back. Like, when you write stuff, firstly, I assume, do you do any writing outside of jokes?
Not really, no.
No, yeah. So, mainly it's joke-focused.
Written a few angry emails recently. That's it.
That's about it. Yeah. Look, who hasn't? Yeah. Have you sent them all?
No, they're still in my draft.
Okay. Yeah. That's it.
Look, I'll be hitting send after we finish.
Okay. Right. All right. Hear the fallout next time. But the what I mean though, so it's different when it's comedy as well, because you're writing ultimately with a shorter thing in mind than a novel.
Yeah.
But still, do you approach it wanting to say something sometimes, or is it just kind of whatever funny thing comes in your head? Like, how do you kind of approach that side of things, I guess, with the comedy?
Well, comedy is weird because I find that as soon as you try to say something, it stops being funny. Like, I've never successfully communicated a message through comedy, really. Or at least not a literal message, but I do, like all my good jokes, there'll be a kind of feeling that I have of like something that I'm upset about or mad about or whatever. And then I will maybe talk about that feeling on stage or something and bomb. And then go away in the like sting of that bomb and write a joke that is the joke that I wish that I'd had the presence of mind to say while I was bombing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of how I tend to do it, at least when I've done anything that has ended up working. Yeah, so usually there's a feeling and then I find like the if I'm going to find the right angle, and usually it's hard to write jokes, so usually I don't, but if I do end up finding the right angle on it to make it a joke, it's usually after I've just sort of talked about it on stage enough for those people to hate me. And then I try to work out a way to say it where they don't hate me.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
make them laugh.
Yeah. No, that's right. So like, yeah. I do that. Sometimes I've done that where I'm like, I've got this thing. I'm thinking, I get up on stage and I'm like, oh, wait, there's no jokes in this at all. This is just...
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I guess the difference between the two of us is that I then go back and write the jokes.
No time for that. I'm just hoping to wing it all the way to the top. Nah, look, it's true. I sometimes do fall into the habit of not writing back on stuff as much as I should.
Yeah.
Do you have a structure when you do that? Like, do you try to, I guess, with your writing style, do you write, yeah. firstly, I guess, do you write much?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't ever found a, like, consistent way to do it. But recently, I've just sort of been typing in, because it's so hard to get stage time at the moment, like, compared to pre-COVID. When there are a lot more gigs and open mics and whatnot. Nowadays I kind of just type on my laptop and then I always carry a notepad around. And, I mean, most of it's just trash or more like a diary, and then every so often I'll have something in there that I might try and stage.
Right. And yeah. So do you do it like a... half an hour, like set a timer and then you can't move or like...
No. I just sort of go to a cafe usually and order a coffee, and then I'll stay for as long as I can without them getting annoyed, you know, because like they want to keep turning over
yeah.
customers and like, are you going to order food? And I'm like, nah, I'm just going to... Yeah, usually I just stay for a bit and write until I feel sick of it.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
And do you, like, how often do you try to split it between new stuff, like writing out a new concept or like revising more, or is there anything you do with that?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, it's always just sort of typing out what's on my mind, and then every so often I'll go back and look at stuff that I've written. But usually that part of it only really comes before a gig, and I'll just go back through my notes and see if there was anything that I wrote that has the feeling of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I always find that if you try to write funny, it stinks. But if you like write something normal and then just cut out the funny parts, then it sounds like you're a human being, which is kind of important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's how I do it.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes sense. Like, I've heard or read about so many different strategies. Like, the one that I don't mind is, like, the just talk it out as well. Like, stand up and just talk it out for 5 minutes and then just try to
take
two sentences from it and then put it into something.
Yeah, yeah.
But... like, I guess, yeah, but then let's say you got a bit that you kind of like, whatever, or you think it's okay.
Yeah.
Surely you then got to keep going back to it to refine it slowly, or?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's right. But I always have trouble. My biggest issue has always been like making bits longer because I can, because I was a lawyer or something, but you're taught to write really concisely. So, you know, an idea that might be big enough to support a 5 minute bit, I will have a 30 second joke that uses that idea, and then I've moved on. So I always find that if I do try to write stuff that's longer, everything that I write, all the padding is just makes the joke worse. The only way that I've really worked out to make a joke a lot longer is to talk it through on stage and find extra punchlines up there, or you know, like while if you've got a hot room, like, and you're riffing on a joke that you've done a number of times. But yeah, I find it really hard to sit down and write a long joke until I know that the first laugh is actually a laugh. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then after that, you can. But then even then, you sort of develop more on stage still, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
table,
yeah.
Right.
It just feels pointless, like, to write a 6 minute bit and you're like, I don't even know if the premise is funny, let alone, you know, all these digressions in the fourth minute of it. Like, it just seems crazy to me. It just seems like a waste of time.
Yeah.
I mean, people do it successfully, but I just have never been able to do it.
Yeah, I've seen a few people are like, they plan it all out and do the whole thing. So it's really impressive. Do you actually, to go on that comment about the hot room sort of thing, and this is something which I rate, and actually I've seen you do it a few times, I've been like, oh fuck, I've got to be more aware of what the room requires, rather than just, because again, same thing, you don't gig much, so for me I'm like, oh, I want to try out this and this.
Yeah.
You go to a room where it's just clearly not appropriate.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll just do it anyway, which is like poor form. But I've seen you actually do you switch around when you go to the room? Do you like be like, oh, actually this room's probably more appropriate to this?
It totally depends. Like, yeah, it depends on the context. If you're if I'm getting paid, then I won't just go up and do new material.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. But I might do some newish stuff in the middle. And then everywhere else it's more or less fair game, you know, cuz like, you know, unless it's some place where you're not sure that you're going to get booked again if you don't really do well, then if you're not getting paid, I think just
go nuts.
I mean, it depends. Like, you always want to do well and stuff, and it depends on your relationship with the person who runs the room or whether they trust that you were funny or not. I like to do new. I mean, and also if it's a room where you're comfortable, then it's easier to do new. Whereas if you feel like, oh, I'm kind of on thin ice with this person who books this, then it's like, well, why wouldn't you just do old stuff and have a good gig and cement your place
with
that person.
Yeah.
so that they don't mind booking you again, and maybe that next time you can do some newer stuff.
You can play around again like that.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah, have you been around Australia doing your stuff as well?
I've mostly done comedy in Melbourne, but I started in Perth and I do it over there when I go back. And I've done some stuff I did three gigs in Sydney a couple of years ago, and I'm planning to go back soon and Queensland as well. But, I've mostly performed Melbourne, and Perth. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and look, if this is too much detail, you don't want to give that to
sure.
But like, as in, how do you, I know a few people now who do comedy and like that's their full-time job thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of time they also run rooms and things like that to try to cover the cost. Like, how do you, I guess, from the cost point of view, sticking mainly to Melbourne, like, is that, do you do extra stuff to try to get there? How do you like kind of?
I help run a room with, some other people on Friday nights called Fresh Fridays at Club Voltaire, Fresh Friday Comedy, which has been going really well. And I've run other rooms in the past, and I'll probably run a couple of other rooms in the future. So that's part of it. And then I only quit my job once I started getting some paid work, not heaps, certainly nothing approaching the kind of money I was making when I was working full time as a lawyer, as you can imagine. But enough that it wasn't like crazy to,
it was realistic
in the sense of like in a couple years, maybe this could be like viable, not realistic. Like, oh, this is already enough to live on, because it wasn't, but, enough that it wouldn't be insane to like to leave. It's partly running rooms, it's partly doing paid gigs. I guess the difficulty has been that with COVID and the borders, it's actually been impossible to travel around and perform. I mean, it's been impossible to travel more than 5Ks. So I haven't really actually had a good look at what life would be like if everything was open.
You only got like 3 months of it, right?
That's kind of what I'm planning for next year. But I'm also excited because I've got an interview to drive a van to deliver groceries. So I think that's probably going to be a fair amount of my income, to be honest, as well.
I read the honesty, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fair enough for now because everything's coming back. So
Everything is coming back. And, at the moment, it's not just like everyone is coming back, not just people who are starting out trying to make a living as a comedian, but also people who are like on the radio or on TV, they also haven't been performing and they also really want to perform. And so, good luck getting paid work when whichever booker also has a message from someone off the project or whatever.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, can I jump up? Like,
That's all the thing people don't realize, like that's everyone's fighting for spots now. So just like everyone drops down the tally while that's going on.
And you're like, oh no, you're nobody at all. you're less than nobody. Who the fuck are you? Who are you? Why are you messaging me? Quit.
Quit.
Yeah. And that's how I feel when people message me for spots.
Okay. Like, who are you?
Who are you? I know that we were talking the other day, but this is different.
Now. Now I've got all the power. It's all different.
Yeah.
I guess as you bring that up and the realizations you had reading this book with the social media, like the fact you took a break and then you had this view of balance and trying to do that. I guess apart from the comedy side of things, like trying to, I guess, be more aware of what you're presenting on stage, as you mentioned, does that also translate into like the lifestyle and things like that? Like trying to be more balanced and approaching in different ways?
Yeah. I mean, when I first, when I first quit, I kind of did it on the basis of like, I'm going to just go as hard as I can for a year and see how I go. So all I did was like do spots, whichever spot I could do, I would do it. Like the best gig that night I would do that I could get, I would just do that. So I was like, you know, I was hosting terrible like sign up open mics for $40 and I was there for 3 hours and I was like, well, it's all stage time. And I'd do that like 6 or 7 days a week. I definitely, was just like, oh, this is all I do and this is all I am. And, everything else will fall by the wayside. But I probably would have kept doing that if COVID hadn't happened. But I think, after like going through the lockdown and realizing that comedy can just disappear, does make you reassess and go, oh, well, I also have to have a life apart from this, because, you know, if I ever get sick, my comedy career, like in inverted commas, won't come and visit me in the hospital. So I've definitely tried to be more balanced and kind of just enjoy my life, or have good things in my life apart from comedy and,
Right. Like what, like friends and things like that?
Spend more time on friendships and not just view everything through the lens of whether it's going to, help me make money from comedy, but also, what would actually be good for me as a person. That's why I'm excited to drive this van, man. Like, just like, obviously it's time away from writing and stuff, but I do think that having that van money on top of this, whatever I make from comedy will be a big boost. Dude, I haven't even looked at the van yet. I'm so excited to get inside. I don't even have the job, so I've just got an interview. But
okay.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, though.
Fingers crossed and knock on wood.
Yeah. I guess... Because it sounds like what you're going through is a lot of what, like, I think a lot of people in a lot of industries kind of whether about the importance of the various things in their life. And I guess that's kind of leads into, so you mentioned, you stopped your career to go into comedy and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from having this realization of being more balanced, but you still want to do the comedy stuff. So I guess we, in a non-confrontational sad way, but why do you want to do comedy?
Because I like it. It's the only thing that I really like. I found it really hard to be a lawyer for so long. I felt like I had this song in my heart that I wasn't allowed to sing, you know? And you ever feel that way, George?
Hi, of course, yeah, every day.
I think as well part of the appeal of it is it's so hard and so unrewarding and you get told so many times that it keeps your interest, whereas law studying it was challenging, but once you have a bit of experience, like once you get your foot in the door and you have a bit of experience, it's quite easy to progress in your career. Whereas comedy, it's like people just tell you no all the time for years, and it's so much more rewarding when you get something good.
Are you getting yes?
It's like, hey, do you want to do a 10-minute spot? The pay is $50, and it's like, this is more satisfying than when I put a pedophile in jail.
That was good for society. This is good for me. This is safe,
which is such a crazy thing, but
don't know what this says about you in relationships in general. Just treating your mean, keep your keen by the sound of it.
I mean, there's obviously something fucked going, but yeah, it was and I think also I always wanted to write or do something creative, and it was just like, you know, the usual sort of factors that lead you into professional careers, but comedy is the one that has fit the best with my life and I guess what I like to do.
And what you what you actually want to do as well.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Again, to just go back to the writing thing for one more second, because like I guess you read, you appreciate good language and stuff like that. So do you ever try and sit and like zhuzh up your writing, I guess? Like, as in, if you've written a joke, do you like intentionally try to make it sound cleverer, or like, not cleverer, like to show off how smart you are, but more like more interesting, I guess, and engaging in terms of the forms of language used or whatever?
Not really. I mean, I guess the only thing that I try to do is make the punchline as like clear as possible, or like just make the joke as clean as possible. And I don't mean in clean as in not swearing, but clean as in the audience knows exactly what you mean and they know exactly why you're saying that this thing is funny. So they know, like, so that it's set up and then the punchline is tight.
Mm.
I mean, that's my goal. And, I'll use whatever language to get there. But I don't think I usually use a lot of big words. I try to not use many words or like any big words. Usually the shorter the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, and the lawyer thing.
Clean.
Just concise, clean, and like, short, sharp, and make sure it's all very easy to understand.
Well, and reliable, because I'm such a bad performer, and like, I mean, I like getting a little bit better, but especially when I started, like if a joke wasn't funny on the page, there was nothing in my performance that would make it funny to the audience. So it had to be funny on the page. Like that's what I mean. Like it had to be like a spell. Like it had to be like an incantation of these exact words in this exact order. And written well enough that I could just say it in my own shitty monotone and dead eyes and not moving on stage, and the audience would still laugh. So that's kind of when, like, where I came from, because I was I was so scared of performing. That's kind of how I try to write. Although it's getting harder and harder.
What do you mean?
It's just so hard to write jokes like that. Like it's so hard. Like I was writing, like I'd have a new 7 minutes every year, which is not enough.
Mm.
It's impossible to build material that way after a while. At least it is for me.
Yeah, I guess it's that wall that one-liners can fall into almost. So you don't do one-liners, but it's the same thing where it's like just...
It's time consuming.
Yeah, and you're laborious. And because you're like...
For
like
such little reward.
Yeah, because like you're saying, you're only doing 30 seconds on a bit that could go for 5 minutes. It's almost...
Yeah. In someone else's hands.
Yeah. Is that something you want to try to work to...
Yeah, I'm trying to get better at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say as well, in terms of your performing thing, I feel like the monotone sort of lack of movement and stuff, that's also... That can be funny though, that...
Sure, but I mean... If you're going to do that, then what you have to say becomes so much more important.
Mm.
Whereas if you have a funny look or voice or whatever, that makes just your words funny, or, you know, it just puts a lot of pressure on the running.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of, I was at a crutch where I can have like a level of energy on stage, which can usually get an audience tired of having fun without having to actually write the thing underneath it. So. Yeah. It's good practice for you to do it that way, I think, as well.
Yeah.
You can, it forces you to do, although 7 minutes a year is probably, but it's good 7 minutes, eh?
It's like some of it's okay. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing it for like 9 years. I've got maybe 15 good minutes, which is crazy. But
what do you mean?
I've got 15 good minutes that I could do for like a paid set.
Right. Like as in, but you're
really reliable.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But you're probably being a bit self-effacing, surely.
No.
No?
No.
I've seen you do so much good stuff. You're great.
Yeah, but out of that, like 15 minutes of it is like consistent enough that I'd go, oh yeah, I'd do that at a big club.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be like, no matter what, this stuff's going to hit.
Well, like 90%. No matter what. Yeah, 90%, 95%.
Yeah, yeah. You can never be fully in control of the crowds. Yeah. Actually, and this might be a dead end completely. Mm-hmm. Does the fantastical element, like, so do you read it completely outside of that? Like, do you go, you read all types of literature or is it like...
Yeah.
So, like, was there a change in that over the years? Did you start reading more and more like nonfiction and fiction stuff, or do you kind of, it's always been kind of spread everywhere?
I've had a few different phases. When I was in high school, I read a lot of fantasy because I got bullied.
And as then, you've established, yeah.
Fantasy and sci-fi. And then when I got to uni, I started reading the classics.
Yeah.
Since then, I've kind of broadened and I just read everything now. Mm. So I read a lot of nonfiction, a lot of books on psychology. And I've only just started getting back into like more modern literature. Like I'm reading the new Sally Rooney at the moment. I don't read very much sci-fi or fantasy anymore. Usually I'll just read it after I've read something a bit more intense or dense. And then I'll just read it as like a palate cleanser or like fun.
Yeah. It's
something easy. Just to take a break.
Yeah. It's kind of exactly how I kind of do it. I'm like, read something more dense and you're like, okay.
Well, it's like gaming. Like I just feel the further I get into adulthood, the more embarrassing it is to like play video games or to read fantasy, unless it's good.
Yeah.
You know? Because otherwise, you know, what are you doing, really?
Well, look, that could be what people like, you know, as long as...
Well, I'm just saying for my own my own perspective, my own life, I'm like, nah, not for me.
Yeah, if it's... But if you're not finding any joy in it, then there is definitely no reason in reading fantasy all day if you're not enjoying the hell out of it.
I do enjoy it, but it also feels like this isn't what I should be enjoying.
So there's an element of that as well.
Yeah. I want to be a serious person who reads serious literature.
Look, I guess that's the way. I mean, I guess, I would have said just as you're getting older, you get more concerned with time. So,
That's like, definitely I'm just a like part
my
of
time.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do 50 fantasy books because it's just, I don't want to use my time
exactly
just for that.
And what's this going to add to my life? If I get into the mystical world of Krondor, you know, and I know all these characters, like, yeah, but you're still like 34. Driving a van.
Hopefully
I'm driving a van.
It's hilarious. Okay. I just remembered one other thing I was going to ask you before. So now you've said how it's switched and I don't know if this is going to tie in at all with the balance you found or whatever, but you already said how you really enjoyed your time you took off social media over the COVID time, which again, fair enough.
And
it frees you from a lot of the pain. But as you also said, it's needed for the career of especially something in these days, how fucking ridiculous it is. Everything is self-promotional, that stuff. How are you going to, find the balance in that now? If you're like going back into that now, are you going to switch back to doing it? Are you going to try a different angle or like, what's your thoughts there?
I'm not sure. I'll definitely do it, but I'll just try to do it in a way that where like my priority isn't self-promotion at the expense of my own peace of mind. Like I get really, you know, like you post something and then you're just always checking the likes and checking the views and all that sort of stuff. I definitely do that and I hate it. So yeah, I'm just going to try and be a bit more conscious of how I do it and probably not do it as often and post stuff that I'm more comfortable with.
Stuff you actually like and you want to
put out there. Yeah.
That's that's the ideal.
Yeah. And I guess just treat it more as a kind of necessary evil than before, where I was kind of confused about why I was doing it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So yeah, you had that. Yeah. Really. Yeah. That's the worst. If you're confused about why you're doing it, then you're like, why?
You're like, I know that I should be doing this. I don't know what I'm trying to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully that's a more healthy.
Yeah.
I reckon. Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, I guess that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks very much for being on.
Thanks. Is it meant to be a comedy podcast?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Because I haven't been very funny.
It's a whatever podcast. Yeah, no, yeah. It's not a riff.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be us riffing for an hour. No. It's because it's about you and stuff. So unless you just want to riff on more.
Yeah, but if I do think of anything funny, I might just send it. I'll record it and send it to you and you can just
slot it in.
Yeah.
I actually really hope you do now. So there's a really obvious bit halfway through. I was like, what was that? And then we were explaining it right now. So now I'm expecting it. Cool. Okay. So the one last thing, even though we've just discussed your distaste for social media and stuff, but is there any way anyone should follow you?
Absolutely. This? Absolutely.
Or anything they should watch? Yeah.
Yes. So follow me on Instagram, instagram.com. And then search for my name. Instagram.com/ enter the portman. Enter the portman. And I'm also on TikTok. And my handle on there is enter the portman. And I'm doing a trial show at Club Voltaire on Saturday, the 18th of December. At 7:30 p.m. So I'm trying to get ready for the various festivals next year. So I've got a bunch of new material that I've been working on, and I'll be doing an hour.
You're going to do an hour?
Yeah.
After your claims of having...
Dude, I've written so much good shit.
Ignore that stuff
before. Ignore that stuff before.
I love it. Yeah.
So I'm going to be doing an hour of really good material. And that is on the 18th of December at 7:30 at Club Voltaire.
I like you had it written down, ready to like drop in. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
I'll make sure to release the episode before then.
Yeah.
Are you doing, how many festivals are you doing next year?
I'm doing the Fringe World Festival. I'm doing three shows there. My show is called The Only Way Is Up. And then I'm doing a split show in Adelaide Fringe with Nick Kwan called Top Shelf Comedy. And I'm hoping to do Melbourne as well. But details are TBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks very much for being on. That was a good time.
Thanks, George.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.